listeners to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by SimTrainer. I'm Jeff Pedro in with Mark Avery. And as I mentioned, we're from SimTrainer, which is the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road, right across from DP&L in Moraine. You can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com. You can give us a call at 937-293-3914, and we'd be more than glad to take care of any of your shooting-related interests. We're open today, for example, up to about 5 o'clock, and then tomorrow we're open 1 to 5. If you have anything you want to talk to us about, you can stop by the range at 2031 Dryden Road, and we'll be glad to talk to you about concealed carry classes, firearm selection, whatever it is that you're interested in. We had a pretty lively show last week, and we left the show with several callers on the line. But I want to encourage you, if you want to get on the line today, you can call us at 457-1290. That's 457-1290, and we'll be glad to get you in the queue and get you on the air as soon as possible. This last week, one thing of noteworthy significance that kind of caught my attention is rather frustrating is I'm not – real avid watcher of the Olympics, but I happen to probably every day spend a little bit of time watching several events, especially some of the highly touted events, people going for multiple records and things of that nature. But I found it very frustrating that not a single shooting event of the many that were conducted during this Olympiad were broadcast on mainstream television, and I find that to be unsuccessful or unacceptable. We had trap and double trap, which is a very interesting and fast-paced sport that really requires a lot of accuracy. When you got, for anybody that shot trap or skeet, when you're talking double trap, the speed at which those clays are flying across the air, pretty phenomenal. In the championship round, one bird separated four shooters, and it was pretty significant, and there was a lot of excitement in that, and you had to go out on the web in order to catch any of the broadcasts of that, and there was no mainstream television. And I heard two reasons why. The first was that someone, and I don't know who, thought that it was one way to pay their respects to the victims of Aurora, Colorado, which I quite simply, with all due respect to the people involved in that situation, I think it's unacceptable, especially since the shooting center, the headquarters for the shooting sports for the Olympics, is in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And, you know, we have people just like every other sport in the Olympics. They travel from all over the country to go to that location at their own expense, put in their own time, a whole lot of effort away from family, away from other activities. And they're on the world's scene. And yet we don't portray that on the mainstream television. It's just very unacceptable. I can't believe it happened.
And there were some rather significant accomplishments in the shooting sports with the U.S. shooters this year. Kim Rohde has now medaled in 5 consecutive Olympics. She shot a world record in women's skeet. I was watching it this morning online. You can't, like you mentioned, there wasn't any of it broadcast, but I went out to the NBC Olympics website and looked at and watched that world medal performance, the gold medal performance. She shot it clean. I mean, yeah, okay, she's an Olympic shooter, and Olympic shooters kind of, you know, you expect excellence. She shot 3 rounds with missing one bird out of 75. She got 74 out of 75, and in the finals, she shot clean 25 birds. And skeet, they're flying. Those birds are moving fast. She's just swinging back and forth, even in the center station. I don't know how much familiarity our people have with skeet, but it's another fast-paced sport. And the birds, especially when you're in the front and in the center, the birds fly across you. You're having to track them going both directions. And she was amazing. The entire place just exploded with cheers when she did that. And the other nice thing about the shooting sports, when somebody doesn't do exactly perfectly, the whole place just, oh, they just, you can just hear the anguish. They can, you say, oh, I really wanted, that just hurts to, I'm sorry that you weren't able to get that. And it's cheering for people. Nobody's ever, it's always, maybe that's partly because it's an individual sport and people are looking to see that. And the people that come to the shooting sports, everybody's rooting for everybody. You want everybody to do well, and when they don't, you know, you feel bad for them, and But there's no booze, there's no, you know, cheering for one and not cheering for another. When somebody does a good performance, the entire place cheers. But when Kim Rohde finished that last bird and the sign went up on the display that said Olympic record, I mean, the whole place just blew up. It was, and that's the way it should be.
It's truly the spirit of the Olympiad, you know, kind of coming to life when you watch the shooting sports. And another reason I heard that it wasn't broadcast is that there's not a whole lot of interest in the air pistol and the air rifle. And I'm like, that's
come
absolutely who are they interviewing? Because I got to believe that if you interviewed anybody that's in the shooting sports whatsoever, they would certainly love to see some of those events broadcast. Because even though the air rifle is done with pellets, it's a tremendous amount of practice and precision and fine-tuning and practice and modifying your weapon or your firearm. And
they're not shooting Daisy Red Rider.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and
nothing wrong with a Daisy Red Rider, but let me tell you, what they're shooting is, I mean, it's, you know, it's completely different style of technology. It's amazingly precision tools.
A couple of the sources reference the fact that because of the emergence of the action pistol and the IDPA and the IPSC type competitive events, that the offhand, one-hand shooting events have kind of waned. Well, you know, there may have been a slight decline in those over the years, but there's still a whole lot of people. And here's the thing. There's a lot of middle-aged people who would probably be very interested in trying their lot, and because they don't have to run and do all the tremendously overly physically exerting activities, they could get themselves in the hunt to be on that Olympic team. And there's a lot of people around the country that would very much welcome the opportunity. And one of the ways that you promote the sport is to show the sport. I know that they showed, you know, I remember the year that they showed skateboarding, or what they call it. They don't call it skateboarding, but as a
half pipe,
it was a demonstration sport the first year, but then after that it became a competitive sport. Well, the one way you increase interest in the sport is to let it be on the international spotlight, and they had a great opportunity, and a combination of individuals and entities didn't take advantage of that, and that should be condemned. Certainly, if you have an opportunity to send an email to the people in charge of those events, I encourage you to do so. But that's just something that I thought was a terrible tragedy, and it certainly didn't do any service or pay the proper respects to the people who were put all that time and effort into those sports.
Yeah, and also I think that it makes it more difficult then to recruit the next leagues of Olympics hopefuls into the shooting sports. I mean, you look at the weighed gymnastics when the U.S. women won the gold of the first time, gymnastics just flew through the roof. Now, is women's skeet going to go through the roof because Kim Rohde, who now for her fifth consecutive Olympics has medaled and medaled with an Olympic record?
I think that's the record. She medaled in five consecutive Olympics. I think that's the record for doing it in five consecutive.
That's true also, but she also set an Olympic record for that sport.
Yeah.
74 out of 75 in women's skeet. That was another Olympic record.
If you people out there have shot, trapped, or skeet, I want to tell you that even when I do practice rounds where I know the direction that the bird's going to be thrown, to get 24 out of 25 is virtually impossible. And I've shot alongside some of the best shooters who actually taught me, and they had difficulty hitting 22, 23 out of 25. So to get 74 out of 75, quite an accomplishment.
Oh, it's amazing. Let's go out to the phones, and we've got some Joseph, who's called in from Centerville. Joseph, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I just have a few questions. I'm interested in applying for the concealed carry permit.
All right.
And I'm 29 years old, and probably about 8 years ago, unfortunately, I was struggling with kind of some mental health issues, and there was something with kind of like suicide related, and I spent a little bit of time in at a hospital just for observation, but was released and everything, and been doing well ever since, and I'm just on some mild antidepressants. But I was looking at the concealed carry permit, and there's about four or five questions about basically related to mental health. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with those exact questions, but I was wondering how those read, if that was an obstacle for me getting the concealed carry permit.
Well, as far as it being an obstacle, I think that the spirit of the law, I don't know about the letter of the law, and we'll look up some of the specific language, but there is, if you're adjudicated mentally incompetent.
And that's the key.
That's going to be a judge or some other governing body determining that you are currently, not in your past, but you are currently mentally incompetent, or you have such a, you're in such a mental state that they could not in good conscience give you a release, so to speak, to own and possess a firearm. So I believe the specific language is declared adjudicated mentally incompetent, which is going to take some sort of a court ruling and or formal authorized notification by a physician. So I don't, based on what you said, I don't think that's the case now. Is that correct?
No, not in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. And I have the questions that I had to dig for a second to find. You're talking about question 13 and the multiple parts there.
Yes, yeah.
Adjudicated means that that's happened through a legal process. There's due process involved with that, so that's clearly not the case. And assuming that you were in this facility either for observation or under your own, that you weren't forcibly committed there by the force by a court, then committed to a mental institution does not apply. And that would, again, be involuntarily committed to for purposes other than observation. So, and again, the adjudicated mentally defective, that is also the same thing that requires the due process. So none of those apply to the normal types of things where someone has had has needed some sort of treatment.
Okay. Yeah, it doesn't sound like it fits me, and I wanted to be honest about it and just clarify. So.
No, sure. And the answer to all of those is no.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I greatly appreciate it.
As a follow-up to that, the unfortunate reality is there are people out there who, hearing what the last caller just said, they say, well, wait a minute. If there's anything in his past that could be remotely put our finger on that would show that he could have some mental instability, then we should never, ever, ever, ever let him ever own a gun and certainly carry a gun in self-defense of himself or others. And I'm like, these people forget how people's lives go through various stages and things, and, you know, life circumstances change. And whether it's a prior criminal history or some sort of situation, as the last caller described, that was 8-10 years removed, and he's since totally healed and living the life. These people, they don't have a clue for what that entails.
Yeah, and fortunately, those kinds of things do not necessarily have to leave a permanent scar. And when people have been through the treatment that they need, that does a tremendous thing. And that we're not talking about the kind of stuff where people are dangerous to themselves or others. That's where the adjudicated mentally defective portion comes in. We need to take our first break for the hour. If you'd like to be part of our show, call the studio at 457-1290 and we'll get you up on the board. 457-1290 is the number here into the studio control room, and we will get you to be part of the show as well. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290. News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome our listeners back to the show, and if you'd like to get on the show today, please give us a call at 457-1290. That's 457-1290. And I want to shift gears just a little bit and talk about another article of interest that was in the news this past week out of Franklin County, whereby a group of individuals, one a certified, or so they say, certified firearms instructor and two other phonies, over the course of several months, ended up issuing about 600 CHL training certificates so that individuals could go and get their CHL permits at the local sheriff's departments. Basically, what they were doing, they were two individuals who were not certified, were doing various levels of training, and in some cases, no training at all. Yep, they talked another individual into, who was a NRA instructor, I assume, into signing certificates, falsifying that the individuals had received training, and then they were issuing those people those certificates, and they were in turn going to the local sheriff's offices and getting their permits, or at least applying for their permits. Well, the investigation was conducted by the Franklin County Sheriff's Office, and this was uncovered, and the three individuals have been charged with a falsification to obtain CCW permits for a variety of individuals. And the one thing I want to mention, even though those three individuals, at least the preliminary information, were the only ones charged, the implication is that the other 600 people who got there should not be implicated. And I want to tell you right here on the radio, I think those individuals are almost as guilty as the people that were falsified the information, because they themselves falsely presented a false document to a sheriff's office in order to get a CHL. And there's several lines where you sign that you've read the book, that you understand the information, that you receive the training, and you go ahead and you sign that. And I know what people are doing. There's a segment of the population out there that thinks the training should not be necessary, and they're going to try to figure out a way to bypass the required 12 hours of training in the state of Ohio. That's the wrong approach. And like I've said so many times, as much progress as we've made in this whole concept of gun ownership and concealed carry over the last 8 years, it takes incidents like this that detract, and they give the anti-gunners all the ammunition they need to attack us from a variety of fronts. So you need to stand up when you hear people talking about those kinds of issues. When you certainly, if you're ever in a situation where you see somebody about to do something like that, you need to stand up for what's right. And in this particular case, you need to tell them it's not right to do that, and you need to report their activities to the authorities.
One of the things that I think people will probably try to argue is that, well, how are they supposed to know that it didn't meet the requirement? And here's the answer to the question. They have to get a copy of the Ohio Concealed Carry Law book. And on page 4 of that book, in the current edition, it specifically says that the law requires at least 10 hours of certified training in the following matters, and the total time required is 12 hours, 10 hours in the classroom, and another 2 hours of experience shooting a handgun. So anybody who didn't get at least that very basic minimum needs to recognize that the class that they took does not meet the standards of the law. And when they certify on their application, which is an affidavit that's a legal document, then they are basically committing perjury if they say they did get the class that didn't meet those standards.
The other thing the book says is that the training must be done by certified instructors, as you and you as the consumer have the right to ask for a credential. The individual should be able to present you with a valid NRA, basic pistol instructor certification document, or a Peace Officers Training Commission authorization to teach semi-automatic pistol and or a revolver. And you can get that information from your instructors. And if you have any doubt, especially now, it's getting a lot of publicity, and there's a who knows how many people out there have gotten away with it, and they just haven't been caught yet.
So it's just a matter of finding that out. The instructors themselves know exactly how they're certified. Their instructor certification should be on the certificate that you get, either a number or something that indicates when that certificate expires, what their number is. In my case, it's my NRA member number, which is also my instructor number. So I have that. If anybody wanted to see my card that shows my certification, it's available. I have a copy of it. It's on file at the range. So those are the kinds of things that it's the duty of the individual who's taking the class to verify those things. And in fact, on the next page, it says one of the responsibilities that a person should do before paying for any form of training is to verify that the person teaching the class is qualified to teach. We need to take a break at the bottom of the hour and go out to the news center. Give a studio call at 457-1290. We'll get you up on the air. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290 News Talk Radio, WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. We're glad to have you with us today. If you're new to our show, we'd like to give you a little bit of information about what we do here. It's really talking about firearms and concealed carry and issues related to such things. We are on every week at this time pretty much, or at least we will be through the month of August, and then we may get bumped quite a few times between then and Thanksgiving for Dayton Flyer football. If you have not heard our program before and would like to find out some of the things we've covered in the past, you can go out to our website at sim-trainer.com/radio, and that is our show page. We have a podcast link there. We also have our Facebook link there, so if you are on Facebook and you'd like to go out to see some of the stuff, we have that page open, and sometimes people will chat with us throughout the show as well. And also, you can download the individual shows if you don't want to podcast. The podcast goes back about to the beginning of this year, I think. But if you want to catch additional shows and find out some of the topics we've talked about, that's a great place to do it at sim-trainer.com/radio. One of the things that happened during this last week, we're always kind of trying to keep track on what's going on in the news and some of the activities that are going around. The Dayton Daily News published an article on Thursday that talks about Ohio's concealed carry They use the word permits being up. Actually, it's a concealed handgun license, which means that there's not a need for you to get permission from anybody. You meet the qualifications, just like if you meet the qualifications for getting a driver's license, they issue a license. The same thing is true for Ohio for a concealed handgun license. Once you've met the requirements, you get the license. And it says that we now have more of those and that the number has increased significantly over the last, this is with data that's been released from the Attorney General's office through the end of the first quarter of this year. So there's still more information, many more people who have been issued a license, but those numbers, the statistics haven't been released yet. And then the notes also that even though they're up, we're trailing our neighbors, and we are something like number 11 in the national in terms of the total number of active permits, but only 25th, which is right smack in the middle, if you talk about the percentage of the adult population. About 3.2% of the people who would be eligible to have a handgun because of their age in Ohio, 3.2% of them actually have a license to carry a concealed handgun. And now, frankly, I think that's a good thing that there's that many. It's sometimes not that much. There, the numbers go up to, I believe, as high as 8 or a little over 8%. So I think that's a good place to start. Remember, we've only had the license to carry concealed handgun in Ohio since April of 2004. So we still have a lot more time to go. Some of these other states have had concealed carry back from the beginning of this country and have never had a restriction on concealed carry, states like Vermont. And then others have added concealed carry more recently, Florida being one of the early ones that started the wave of concealed carry license and concealed carry being much more available to the average citizen across the country. One of the things that was said in this article, though, kind of drew my attention. They talk about that there's this loosening of concealed carry and that that we have this changing in the way things are going and that we're passing laws that would increase and make it easier for people to get a license to carry a concealed handgun. And one of the statements that was made was that one of the laws that's pending in the Ohio General Assembly would make it so that it would eliminate background checks and gun safety classes. And unfortunately, that is not the case. And the unfortunate part was that it was published incorrectly in the paper. So I posted a note on the online version of the article, and I sent the writer a letter, and I explained to him that what the actual facts are in that. And I got a very nice response back. So this is the kind of thing that I think that those of us who are gun owners really need to do. As we see things that are in error, we need to let folks know that, you know, that's just a factual mistake. It's one thing to have a disagreement over opinions, and we're going to certainly do that. We have our views on what we think is the right answer. I know other people, including the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence and Toby Hoover and the Brady Campaign, have a different view as to what the right answer is. We are pretty sure we're right. And we have a lot of facts to back it up. Those people who oppose the right to keep and bear arms, unfortunately, have very strong feelings, but not many in the way of facts. One of the things that I think is important, though, to understand about House Bill 256, which is sometimes called constitutional carry, that's not really what it is, but that's kind of a shortcut definition. It would mean that it would be possible for you to legally carry a concealed handgun in Ohio without obtaining a concealed handgun license. But in order to do so, under the current terms of that legislation that's pending, you would still have to meet all the requirements to have a license issued. And that means you would also have to have completed a training course that meets the requirements that we were talking about earlier. It must be a 12-hour course, of which 10 hours in the classroom and 2 hours in the range, and that's the minimum. The course at SimTrainer is a little longer than that, partly because we bring an attorney in to teach the legal portion of the class. There's just an awful lot of material that needs to be covered. I don't think I've ever heard anybody come out of that class saying, you know, it was really just too much material. It was too long a time. We've had a lot of people say, gee, I wish we weren't done yet because it seems like there's so much more I'd like to learn. So anybody that actually gets that done in less than 12 hours, I think they're really cheating themselves and cheating the students that they're taking. The bottom line, though, is that the class has standards in Ohio law. You must have completed a course that meets the standards in the Ohio law in order to carry a concealed handgun legally if this law were to pass. So the first statement that says there's no training, that would simply not be true. That's just blatantly false. And the other part of it says that you would not have any background checks. And that is technically true, but it's practically irrelevant, because in order for you to carry a license to carry, in order to you to carry a concealed handgun under that provision of the law, if it were to pass, you would still need to be able to pass a background check. You would need to know that yourself, that there is nothing in your record that would exclude you from getting a license. It means you've had no felonies. It means that you've not been convicted of or pled guilty to domestic violence, no drug charges, no crimes of violence within 3 years, and so forth, as is listed in the Attorney General's guidebook for concealed carry. So even though it's true that you don't have to have a background check in order to carry without it, you still have to be able to pass a background check. And if the background check was done, which would be done if you went ahead and got a license, and the licenses would still be in place, if you had went to get ahead and file the application for the license to get a license, either because you wanted to carry in another state for reciprocity purposes, or because there are some restrictions. For example, you would not be able to carry into a liquor license permit location under the provisions of that law unless you went ahead and got the license, because of other restrictions having to do with that. So it's, I think it's interesting to note that the article was published, and it basically is favorable. But naturally, when you have the comments from people like the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence, those comments are going to say, well, that's a bad idea. That's fine. Those were reported as they were provided. I think the main thing here is, though, it's really incumbent upon us as gun owners to understand what the laws are, understand what the pending legislation is, and to weigh in on that. Let your legislator know what it is, but don't just listen to what you hear somebody talk about. Actually go in and read the legislation to find out what it says.
Well, what's also very frustrating and interesting at the same time is Toby Hoover's comment that why are we spending all this time on giving people these rights when 97% of the people don't think that they would need to walk around with guns in their pocket all the time. What they're failing to recognize, and we've reported this information week in and week out, is that gun sales are at record highs. People seeking or obtaining permits are at record highs. People seeking training are at record highs, and they're breaking the previous record almost on a monthly basis. So increasing numbers of people are starting to see the light. And as Mark mentioned, we're only 8 years into this. Mm-hmm. We had a couple of individuals in our last CHL class that came from Texas, and they had the one individual had his concealed holder's license forever. And but because they don't have the extension of reciprocity with Texas, he had to go through the Ohio class, which he didn't have any problem doing. But he just thought it was ironic, the things that we were requiring, and the fact that we didn't have reciprocity with a state like his that had just as stringent training standards, according to what they talked about, what they had to go through. They both went through 12 hours of training down in the state of Texas. They moved here within the last year, and then they were faced with some issues.
But the difference is that in Texas, you can get your license without the training and get the training after the fact, and there's no difference on the license. And so Ohio says, well, because of that, we have no way of knowing whether they've actually met the training requirements or not. And the other thing he said by the end of the class, he said, I've had concealed carry training in several different states. I've never had anything like I had here at SimTrainer. And I mean, that made us feel really good, because we try to provide a training course that is above and beyond what the state minimum requires. And that's way over. Yeah. So it's just the kind of thing that we look forward. We try to maintain that kind of a standard. And we think that what we provide at SimTrainer is really indeed over and above what you're going to find in a lot of other places. And if every other instructor doesn't feel the same way, I'd say maybe they need to do something. So you're going to hear a different opinion from other instructors, and I don't have any problem with that. That's just something that is absolutely the case. Let's go out and talk to the phones, and we'll talk to Paul, who's calling from Miamisburg. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks. I got a kind of a question. I got in trouble. It's been over 30 years ago, and I don't remember. My attorney was supposed to try to get it expunged. To be honest with you, my attorney's passed. My parents have both passed. I was a kid, a teenager. I don't know what my status is. And the question I have is, if I were to apply for the license, and it turns out that I am ineligible, is that a crime in itself, just applying for the license?
Are you feeling at liberty to mention what the charges were and whether you were charged as an adult?
I was charged as an adult. I can't remember even what the charge ended up being that I pled to because it was broke down. It was a pizza and a 12-pack of beer is what it was.
A theft-related offense?
Stole a pizza and a 12-pack, and it was a felony, but it still ended up being a felony. I don't remember what the final charge was even, and if I try to go online and look at it myself, there's something there, but it just says sealed, and I can't get into it.
Well, what you might want to do is go to the court or the jurisdiction of record and bring your identification with you and see if they can entitle you to view the actual court disposition of that specific case.
But is it, if I did have a felony that precluded me from having the license and I applied for it anyway, is that in itself a crime?
As long as you don't lie on the application, as long as you state clearly, answer the questions accurately on the application and your affidavit, it's not like if you are a prohibited person and go to purchase a firearm,
mm-hmm.
your attempt to purchase a firearm as a felon is, in fact, a crime.
Okay.
But that's not the case for concealed carry in just applying for the license.
Okay, as long as I'm truthful on the application itself.
Yeah, and the license itself or the application is an affidavit. So you need to make sure you've read everything carefully and make sure that you understand those questions. But the other thing that you could do is to go to local law enforcement and request a background check. And then you would get a copy of that back, and whatever it is would show up there if there's something on that record.
Okay.
And then that's also the same record that the sheriff would show, assuming you've been living in Ohio for the last 5 years.
Okay. And I can go to any local law enforcement agency?
Well, I'm not going to say any, but you just want to start with the jurisdiction where you live, and then you'll be able to go from there.
And, okay. And they'll tell you the procedures. It's a BCI background check. They just run it through Columbus. Thanks very much for calling the show, Paul. We need to take our last break for the hour. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. If you'd like to be on the show, give us a call at 457-1290 on 95.7 FM and AM 1290. News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. We've got just a few minutes left, and before we get out of here, I want to make a couple of announcements. First, in a couple of weeks, on Saturday, August 25th, is going to be the opening of the Dayton NRA campaign headquarters. There is going to be free food and refreshments. You can sign up to volunteer. You can make campaign phone calls if you're interested in doing that to earn NRA gear. And the NRA Institute for Legislative Action has recognized that the Dayton area is an important area for this election, and there are a lot of issues that need to be addressed, and the NRA is, like all the rest of the issues that the NRA weighs in on, focusing on the Second Amendment aspects of them, and there are a lot of things that need to be addressed. So we can use as many volunteers as you have time to do that between now. If you're looking for a way that you can perhaps influence the outcome of the elections in November, this is a great way to find out more ways you can do that. So it's at 8943 Kings Ridge Drive in Dayton, Ohio. It will be Saturday, August 25th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And if you would like to get more information on that, you can contact the easiest way is to go out to Facebook. Go to facebook.com/DaytonNRA. And James Lee, who is the NRA field representative here for this area, will have information on that. There's also another bill that's coming that will go into effect later this month. And we'll talk about it a little bit more later. But the main thrust of it is if you've been looking to get a license to carry a concealed handgun, but you have a couple of things in your background, maybe things from several years ago when you were young and stupid, like a lot of us were at one time, and you had done something that put a blemish on your record, now it will be possible to have more than one thing removed. And I still need to do some research on exactly what that is. I have read it briefly. If you have a felony and misdemeanor and there are two different events, it will be possible to get more than one thing expunged from your record. We're currently right now, there's only one. And that may open concealed carry up to a lot of people who have made mistakes in the past and are now living a life that that they need, like everyone else, to be able to be ready to defend themselves from some situation that over which, you know, something they didn't start, but it's a threat to their life or to the life of someone around them. So we'll have more information on that probably next week. And I think that you may find there may be some folks who currently have been unable to get a license who would then be able to do so later. Let's go back out to the phones and talk to Carol, who's calling from Centerville. Welcome to the show. Carol, are you still there? I'm sorry. I don't think I've missed a button here, so if I'm not hearing you, Carol. So if you're still on, she had a question, something about getting a license to carry concealed handgun, being bipolar and on medication. And if it's in control and there's no adjudication of mental defect, I would want to talk with your physician, not me personally. I think you should talk with your physician and let them understand what it is you're trying to do, and then get some counsel from them. You may want to talk to an attorney as well. It is, obviously we've seen several situations where people who had mental problems had done things, but those were people who have been out of control and had serious problems and have done evil things. I don't think if you're at the point that you'd be willing to call the show, that you're probably not in having evil intent. So if that's something that you can get some more information on, that would probably be the best thing. I really can't tell you for certain, but from a legal perspective, as long as that you have not been adjudicated mentally defective, if you have not had some sort of something that would require that you answer the question about having been committed to a mental institution or involuntary committed to a hospital for purposes other than observation, or, as I mentioned before, being adjudicated as mentally defective, which includes having been adjudicated as incompetent to manage your own affairs or ever been committed to a mental institution. Those are the requirements that you would need to have passed in the law. That's what the law requires, that you not have any of those kinds of conditions. And by doing so and filling those requirements, there should then be nothing that would stop you from getting a license to carry concealed handgun if that's something that you would want to do. Sorry, I wasn't able to hear you. So if you're still out there, I'm sorry. That was something obviously didn't work the way it needed to. Well, I want to thank everybody for being a part of our show today. I've had a good time. There's certainly an awful lot of information, a lot of things that are going on. If you hear something that is of interest to you and you'd like to contact us, maybe ask us a question, feel free to send an email to our radio show email address. That's radio@sim-trainer.com, radio@sim-trainer.com, or you can go to our Facebook page on sim-trainer.com/radio, or just facebook.com/SimTrainer, and that will also get you to where you need to be to send us a note. Thanks very much for being part of the show. Stay tuned now for There Is a Season with Bob and Gloria after the news at the top of the hour with Daryl Bauer. This is Mark Avery for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290 News Talk Radio, WHIO.